Okay, thank you for coming at this odd time. I had to change the time because we have a communal event later this evening. But as always, the way we're going to do this is I'm going to ask two questions that people have asked me recently, and you let me know which one of the questions you would like to discuss this evening. So I'm just going to read two emails that I got, or texts. I don't remember if they were emails or texts or WhatsApps or whatever, but you get the point. One of them reads as follows. It's from a Talmud of mine who started teaching recently. He just recently got a job as a teacher. I believe he's been on the job for, when he sent this text to me, he had only been on the job for about 3 weeks. And his email read as follows. Hi, Rebbe. First question on teaching, which isn't really about formal teaching. I just got to school and I see all of the sixth graders in my tefillah class coming in with sculptures and dolls all dressed up. And I ask, what are those? Apparently, they're learning Roman or Greek and Greek mythology, and their project, assigned by a non-Jewish teacher, was to make modern representations from them. I once asked a Rebbe in yeshiva a few years ago about a chess set with Greek gods and statues, about a chess set, and he said that it's not mamish avodah zarah, but it's a problem with the human form issue. So I was wondering what you thought I should do on a halachic level and on a third week on the job level. Halachically, would it be best for them to chip off a piece, either of a nose or an ear, etc.? And on a third week on the job level, should I bring it up to the principal, considering that I'm so new here? So that was Shaila number one. Shaila number two, I got from a soldier serving in the IDF. And those are always my favorite emails and Shailas because it's always so beautiful to see that the people that are defending Am Yisrael are also learning Torah as they're defending Am Yisrael, and every chance they get, chopping a few minutes of Torah here and there. So this particular soldier wrote as follows. I'm currently in the Tzahal, and I listened to your recent Temen Halacha Shir on running to the Beis HaKnesses. And I was thinking about a situation that happened to me recently. I was in my army clothes and gun, coming off the bus back from the army base, and I needed to catch Mincha, so I was running. So can you imagine the scene? He needs to catch Mincha. He's going to be, if he doesn't run, he's not going to be able to daven Tefillah B'Tzibur. He may miss the Zman entirely, who knows? So he's in full uniform and gun, and he's running like a lunatic, right? So one of his friends said, "Oh, is everyone getting an echo, or is that just no? Okay, so I think it might be on your computer." One of his friends said to him, he writes, "My friend told me it might not be the best thing to run in the army uniform and gun, because it might cause unrest to the people around me." I would say that he is right. Is there an issur of causing public unrest or potentially scaring people? And is that issur, whatever it might be, doche davening b'tzibur, or the inyan of running to a Beis HaKnesses, since I might have to walk to get to a minyan instead of running, I might miss the minyan entirely? So, meaning for his own personal hanhaga and avoda, it seems to be that the better thing to do is to run, but the impact it's going to have on the people around him, the better thing to do is to walk. So those are our two shilas for this week. You could vote in the chat and let me know what if you'd rather discuss the Greek mythology or or if you'd rather discuss the Tzahal running shila. Oh, Kovi, it's good to see you. I don't see you, but it's good to see the big K. Okay. Okay, so that's an even vote. We need one more vote. Oh, and that puts it over the top. Okay. Did everyone vote? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Oh, no. Someone could still tie it up, and then I would have the deciding vote. No? Okay. So it looks like by a slim margin, Shiloh number one wins. Okay, so let's discuss Shaila number one a little bit. First thing is, we're going to work with an assumption over here. The assumption we're going to work with, and I think it's a fair assumption, is that Greek and Roman gods are considered avodah zarah. Not to say that these images that are made of them are avodah zarah, but they're at least images of what was an avodah zarah. And there is an issur in the Torah of making images of an avodah zarah, of avodah zarah's significance, meaning there's an issur to worship an idol, obviously, in the Torah. But the Torah also says you're not allowed to construct an idol. Lo sasa lecha pesa v'chol temuna asher b'shamayim imal v'asher ba'aretz mitachas v'asher b'mayim mitachas la'aretz. Okay, so the Okay. Kobi Fleischman just sent me that he just had to check in because he wanted to be get a voting right for the first time in one of these shiurim. Okay, so have a good night. It's late in Israel. So the pasuk says that you're not allowed to make an image. You're not allowed to make a pesa v'chol tmuna of anything b'shamayim mimal var asher ba'aretz mitachas. It happens to be there's a beautiful vart I once heard from Rabbi Isaac Bernstein zichrono levracha on that pasuk having nothing to do with avodah zarah. Just a nice musar vart. He had a beautiful drush. I forget who he quoted, but if you're not familiar with Rabbi Isaac Bernstein's parsha shiurim, they are fantastic. Rabbi Bernstein passed away at a tragically young age in the middle of 1990. He was a Rav in the Jewish Center actually for a couple of years, but he was a Rav in England. And when the OU started their Parsha app that just recently was launched and is a fantastic app, I highly recommend it. So they called me and asked me if I have any ideas of who should be on the app, like who should they make sure that those shiurim are on the app. So my only suggestion was that Rabbi Bernstein's shiurim should be on the app. Rabbi Isaac Bernstein gave the greatest Parsha shiurim, so they actually did. They tracked down all the recordings and the cassettes or however they did it, and they uploaded them onto the app. So if you get the All Parsha app, you'll see Rabbi Bernstein's shiurim. He was just a master orator and he gave an incredible parsha. In fact, my chavrusa, Rabbi Shalom Rasner, when he made Aliyah, said, you know, his whole life always wanted to give a parsha shiur like Rabbi Bernstein's, so he's going to start giving a parsha shiur, and it was really patterned after Rabbi Bernstein. After Rabbi Isaac Bernstein, and now Rabbi Rosner has two svarim of those Parsha Shirim that he's given that were patterned after Rabbi Isaac Bernstein. So anyway, so Rabbi Bernstein had a beautiful vart on this pasuk. Just parenthetically, he said that you know when a person is deciding what his personality is going to be like, what kind of person he wants to be. So a lot of times we take a role model, and instead of using them as a role model, we use them as just an exact model of what we want to be. Meaning we try to replicate somebody else. Don't make yourself just a mirror image of somebody else. Don't make yourself into a pesel or a tmuna. Rather, what should you do? How should you relate to other people around you? And how should that inspire you? Asher b'shamayim, when it comes to heavenly matters, mima'al. Look above you. Look at people who've accomplished more than you. And use that as motivation to try to accomplish more. Asher ba'aretz, and when it comes to gashmius, when it comes to earthly matters, mitachas. Look at those who have less than you. A lot of times, when it comes to heavenly matters, when it comes to mitzvos, we look at people who do less, and we say, I'm pretty good. Compared to that guy, I'm doing much better. And when it comes to gashmius, we only wish we could have a house as big as that one, and a car like that one drives, and a job as nice as that one. You know, and the pasuk is guiding us to look in another direction. It's obviously not what the pasuk means, but it's a nice drush. In fact, my brother, who is as, I guess, as much of a Litvisha style brain as you could imagine, I once spoke somewhere and my brother was there, and my brother Shlita was a huge Talmud Chacham. He came over to me afterwards. He said it was a great speech until you murdered that pasuk. You know, so that was he was not a fan of Vidrasha, but I thought it was a nice drush. In fact, that's why I keep repeating it. But anyway, what the pasuk actually means is that you're not supposed to make a pasuk l'chol tmuna. You're not supposed to make an image of an avodah zarah, and that's what the Rambam writes. Even if you're not going to worship it yourself, it's still an Issur D'Oraisa. Sefer Achinuch HaMitzvah Chav Zayin explains that it's a type of a Siyag D'Oraisa, meaning you don't have to, it's not so hard to figure out. Why is it that you shouldn't make images of Avodah Zarah, lest you come to perform Avodah Zarah? So even though the Ravid argues and he says that there's no Malkus, but that's only because it's a Lav Shabbat. But even the Ravid assumes that it's Nisa Daraisa to make an image of an Avodah Zarah. Now, the question becomes, though, is it still an image of an Avodah Zarah? Meaning, they're not really making an image that's at any risk of anyone worshipping it. Does anyone still worship these images of Greek mythology and, you know, in ancient Roman and Greek mythology? People study it. They study it from a historical perspective to know what was said and what people believe and what people did, but is there anyone that actually believes in this stuff anymore? So it's very tricky to really know that. Meaning, the short answer is no one believes in this stuff anymore. But if you have the internet, you can find people who believe anything. Meaning, you will find that there are a couple of hundred of Meshugaim that still believe in all this stuff, in all this Greek mythology. They're insane, right? Meaning it's totally abnormal. It's not a normal thing for a person to believe. So I'm not sure what to do with that. Meaning, when we say that an avodah zarah at a certain point becomes batel, that it's not an avodah zarah that's practiced anymore, and therefore there are certain things that maybe you're allowed to say the name of an avodah zarah that's currently batel. Let's say there's a city named after an avodah zarah that's batel. So some poskim say you're allowed to say the name of such a city, even though normally you're not allowed to even say the name of a city that's named after an avodah zarah. That's like every city in India is named after an avodah zarah. Problem is, in India, they're all named after an avodah zarah that's actually a Getchka sitting in a temple, and and is at the center of each city. So you don't really have any easy etzes there. But like, there are plenty of cities in Europe also that are named after avodah zarahs. So some of the half the months of the Jewish calendar, of the secular calendar, are named after avodah zarahs. January through June are all named after avodah zarahs, right? July and August are after Julius and Augustus Caesar, and then September, October, November, December. Those are just numbers, right? But every the first 6 months are all named after avodah zarahs. So one of the things that days of the week. So one of the things that people say is that no one worships avodah zarah anymore. So I don't know, how does that work? Is that nobody worships it anymore, or that like no normal person worships it? Meaning, if you ask someone who doesn't have the internet, does anybody worship these avodah zarahs? The answer would be no. So now that we have the internet, does that mean that people worship it? Because I could find the four Meshugayim that like there's I remember in a lecture from Rabbi Dr. Schneur Lyman, he say a number years ago, it was a couple of decades ago already, he mentioned that there's still a group of like four or five guys that get together in Washington every year that still believe in Shabtai Tzvi. They still think he's coming back. I mean, at a certain point, you say that's just insane. That's just crazy. So is that considered something that's still worshipped? So I'm not exactly sure how to deal with such a thing. But Pashtus is that this is not an avodah zarah that runs any risk of being worshipped. But there's not only an issur to worship avodah zarah, not only an issur to make an avodah zarah, to fashion in avodah zarah, there's also an issur to, or potential issur of looking at icons and images. The Torah says, "Al tifnu elohelilim," that you're not allowed to turn to idols. What does that mean? You're not allowed to turn to idols. So, and does that only include actual idols, or does it include even images that represent the idols? So there is a medrash in the Sifra that has two interpretations of the pasuk. One interpretation says you're not allowed to study anything about avodah zarah, to study the belief system, to learn how the idol was worshipped. And the second shita is that you're not even allowed to look at idols. And the Rishonim paskin both of those shitos. The Rambam Milchsavos Chavim Perak Beis Halacha Beis writes, Svarim Rabim Chibru Avdei Chavim Bavodasa Heichikar Avodasa Ma Maaseh Mishpatel. There are lots of books about avodah zarah that you can find that are out there, and how people should worship these avodah zarahs and what they did and what they believed. Tzivanu HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shelo Likros Posen HaSvarim Klal. You're not allowed to read those books at all. V'lo Naharba, V'lo B'davar Mitvareha. You're not allowed to think about those what's written in those books. And then you're not even allowed to look at the tzura. So the Torah says that you're not allowed to study avodah zarah, and that's exactly what they're teaching in these classes when they're studying Greek mythology. So maybe that's something that should be mentioned to the principal. So the question is, though, is it also to look at items that represent an avodah zarah, even though they're not themselves worshipped? Meaning, you have a couple of yisurim over here. So certainly, learning about the avodah zarah would seem to be a violation. We'll come back to that one, because it may not be. But then they created these images that are meant to represent the avodah zarah. So are you even allowed to have such images or to look at such images? So it really depends how you understand a Gemara in Shabbos Kuf Mem Tes. The Gemara in Shabbos Kuf Mem Tes says that it talks about like reading captions under pictures. scissors, shtari adyotos, gzeros that they make, that you're not allowed to read certain material on Shabbos. So the Gemara says that you're not allowed to look at a tzura even on weekdays because it's a violation of al tifnu el ha'elilim. The Gemara says that it's not abundantly clear from the Gemara that you're not allowed to look at any image, whether it's worshipped or not. But elsewhere, the Gemara of Zara daf nun, meaning the implication of the Gemara is that any image, that even if it's a non-worshipped image, because Gemara does not limit it to a worshipped image. However, the Gemara Nevel Dezar Daf Nun talks about someone by the name of Rabbi Menachem ben Simlai, who's Benon Shel Kedoshim. He was called Benon Shel Kedoshim. Why was he called Benon Shel Kedoshim? What did he do that earned him that title? That he didn't even look at the tzura on a matbeya. But sounds like that's a chumrah, meaning because he was such a holy person, he wouldn't even look at the image on a coin. But it sounds like a regular person would look at an image on a coin. So it sounds from that Gemara that you're allowed to look at such images, even if they themselves, as long as they themselves are not worshipped. Presumably, the images that they put on coins were images of Avodah Zarah, meaning it's a way of showing honor to something. So the Rishonim have different approaches to explain the Gemara in Shabbos. So one approach is that of Tosos Masechah Shabbos. And Tosus writes that the issur of looking at an image is only to one that was manufactured for the purpose of Avodah Zarah. And the image on the coin is not for the purpose of worshipping. It's there to maybe give kavod, because you put faces on currency of people that you respect, of people that you honor. It's a way of honoring somebody by putting their face on the currency. George Washington made it onto the dollar bill because he was admired, not because we think lowly of him, right? So, but it wasn't meant to be worshipped. So according to that shita of Tosfos, the Gemara seems to learn that you're not allowed to look at any image whatsoever. That you're only not allowed to look at idols themselves. That's the Isser. And then it's a Chumrah not to look at images of idols. Rashi, however, and the Tosas Rid say that no, you're not allowed to look at any image at all. And why does Gemara Nevel Dezara say Rabbi Nachum and Simlai was Benon Shel Kedoshim and he was such a wonderful thing if he just followed the halacha that you're not allowed to look at any image? So Tosas Nevel Dezara writes that even though it's also to look at any image, that's only when you're focused on that image, when you're really paying attention to it. Coins and money, you know, you're not really looking at the image. You're looking at, you want to know, what do I have over here? Is it a quarter? Is it a nickel? But you're not really interested. You're not focused on the image. You're focused on using the money. So it's similar to like the Isser of histaklus, right? It was just last night, someone came running into shul right around mincha time and said, oh, I just made the bracha. And I had no idea what he was talking about. And then after Marav, someone came over to me and said, did you see that gorgeous rainbow on the way into shul? So now I understood what the guy was talking about, that he obviously made a bracha on a rainbow. So you're supposed to say a bracha on a rainbow, but you're not allowed to be mistakel at a rainbow. So how are you supposed to say a bracha on a rainbow if you're not allowed to be mistakel at a rainbow? Elamai, you're allowed to see a rainbow, but you're not allowed to sit there admiring it and gazing at the rainbow. Similar to a woman. You're allowed to see a woman, but you're not allowed to be mistakel at a woman. There's a funny tshuva. One of the achronim, one of the contemporary achronim, someone asked if you should say the bracha on meeting a king when you see the Queen of England. She's not a king, she's a queen, but she's royalty, so she doesn't, you know, her power is very limited. It's really only symbolic, but nevertheless, she has all the trappings of royalty. So do you say a bracha? So there's a funny tshuva in one of the achronim where he says, see the Queen of England? You're not allowed to look at a woman. How could you see the Queen of England? So that's ridiculous. I mean, you're allowed to see the Queen of England. You're not allowed to be mistakel. You're not allowed to gaze at the Queen of England for the sake of pleasure, if you were to do such a thing, meaning if that's your taste. But there's no issur to see. There's an issur of being mistakel. So if you're also with the coins, with the images of Avodah Zarah, that's what Tosfos Avodah Zarah says. You could see the images. You just not allowed to be mistakel at the images. So how do we paskin on this? So it happens to be that it seems that there's a stira in Shulchan Aruch. In Siman Shin Zayin Sifta Zayin, the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Gemara in Shabbos in a way that implies that it's usher to look at any image. But then in Yardei Kuf Mem Beis Sifta Zvav, he says, no, you're only not allowed to look at idols that are worshipped. And he talks about that you're not allowed to get hana from the idol from an actual level of zara. But the Noseh Kelim on the Shulchan Aruch say that the standard practice is to aser only things that are made for the sake of worship. Now there was a tshuva from Rav Moshe where a stamp collector asked Rav Moshe whether he could own, buy, and sell stamps that have crosses on them and other idolatrous images on them. And Rav Moshe said, it's a common item, a stamp. It's like a coin. So you're allowed to own and sell the images. You're just not allowed to be mistakel at them. And Rav Moshe says, oh, but if you want to be benon shel kedoshim, you want to be very holy, so it's a very nice thing to be holy about. That's what the Gemara says, but there's no real Isser Bedavar in doing that. What about like a chess set? So Rabbi Asher Bush, who's a Rabbi in Frisch and wrote two beautiful Svarim called Shaul B'Shlomo in Chelik Aleph, Simon Samachos Beis, he gives different reasons why it's mutter to own a chess set, even though there are crosses on the top of the, what is it, the king? Not the queen, right? The king has a cross a lot of times. So he quotes the Tosfos in Avodah Zarah and Tosfos in Shabbos, and those two sugyas, Avodah Zarah Daf Nun, Shabbos Kuf Mem Tes, that, it's similar to coins. That's not, it's just decorative. You're not really looking at the cross, in an admiring way. Some people see crosses wherever they look. They just, when I was a kid, I don't know if any of you had this experience, when I was a young child in elementary school and they were teaching us how to write letters, they told us to write a lowercase t with a curve at the bottom. Because if you write just a regular lowercase t, that's a cross. I don't know if that's really necessary, but sometimes people are very cautious about this. Another sniff that he adds is that Rav Avadya Yosef writes in Chavdas and Chel Gimel Sim Samachay that you're allowed to wear some sort of medallion with a cross on it for the same reason. I have a guy in my shul told me that he went to law school at St. John's, and when he graduated law school, there was a big to-do because the robes that they wear. See, in Yeshiva University, they had the graduation yesterday in Yeshiva, so there are pictures of President Berman wearing this gigantic medallion. It's like like a hip-hop artist, like a gigantic, like a metal medallion of Toru Mada. So, okay, or of the YU shield. I don't even know what it says anymore. But of the YU shield. So the YU shield is wonderful. But in other places, the robes are decorated with crosses. They're decorated with other images. So it could be that a medallion with such a cross on it, it could be that it's not a problem, but it's lo na'im. It's not right. And the Ritva in Avodah Zarah Daf Mem Beis says that if you have crosses that are on cups for decorative purposes, you're allowed to have such cups. So that's based on that. Rabbi Bush wanted a taina that there's no real problem with the chess sets. You don't have to fix the chess sets. But so let's assume these images are not being produced for worship. They're not representative of any existing religion that anybody believes in, that any sort of Avodah that anybody believes in. But isn't just learning about it a violation of Al Tifnu Al Ha'alilim, that you're not supposed to learn about the beliefs and practices of Avodah Zarah? So there is a fascinating tshuva in the Igros Moshe, a tshuva that was written to Rabbi Parnas Shlita in 1960. So we're going back some time. Rabbi Parnas was, of course, a long-time Rosh Yeshiva in Yeshiva University, and he was one of the founding Rosh Yeshiva, together with Rabbi Braunspiegel. He was one of the founding Rosh Yeshiva of Lander College. Rabbi Parnas asked Rav Moshe the Shaila about a public school teacher, and part of the curriculum, what the public school teacher had to teach, was about ancient Greece and Rome. And he wanted to know whether those religions are, the fact that no one respects those religions in our day and age means that you're allowed to teach them, because there's no concern that anyone's going to go home and go worship these Avodah Zarah. So are you allowed to teach these religions? So Rav Moshe, it appears in Yordei Chelek Bei Simen Nun Gimel, and he says that the Isser of studying Avodah Zarah still exists, even if no one actually observes the religion. It's still going to be an Isser, even if there's no one anymore that practices the religion. You're not allowed to study an Avodah Zarah. And he says, and therefore you cannot read about mythology, idolatry, even if it's just for literature. But then Rav Moshe writes that the Torah asers learning these things only when it's being done in a complementary way. You're allowed to study something written by someone who is mocking the religion, who is making fun of the religion. The Torah itself describes certain avodah zarahs, and you know the Gemara describes certain avodah zarahs, but it's meant to be kol leitzanusa asura chutz me leitzanusa avodah zarah. The Gemara in Megillah says that all leitzanus, you're not allowed to make leitzanus of things. Leitzanus is asur, except for leitzanus of avodah zarah. You're allowed to make a leitzanus out of an avodah zarah. So if it's being done in a way to ridicule and to mock the avodah zarah, not only is that mutter, that's a mitzvah, right? That's why when I was a kid in elementary school, when it came time for December 25th, all my rebbeim used to refer to the holiday as kratzmach, or they were referred to Yashka as, you know, with all sorts of different names, like cheese and crackers, they would call them, or something like that. So I always thought, well, that's so childish. You call them cheese and crackers? You know, to call them Yeshu, I don't know. Why do you have to call them cheese and crackers? So, I realize it's a kiyum. You probably shouldn't do this publicly, and, you know, obviously not. It's not good for interfaith dialogue, but, you know, it's probably a kiyum of kol leitzanusa asura chutz mileitzanusa d'avodah zarah, that you're allowed to make leitzanus of an avodah zarah, and therefore Moshe writes that that could even be good for the students if they realize that once upon a time most of the world's population believed in these ridiculous things, and nevertheless it wasn't true, and maybe that will cause students to, you know, to then make the connection. And if today most of the world believes in fill in the blank, something that's not Toras Hashem Tamima, then that could also be wrong, because people, the whole world could believe something, and it could still be wrong, and it could still be absurd. And maybe the students will be able to put that together. And therefore, Rav Moshe says, as long as you teach it in a way that's ridiculing the Avodah Zarah, it's mutter. And Rav Moshe's concluding paragraph is, Vim Kain, Kishatzarich Lamid Baha Kors Shalo, In Yonei Doseyem Vavleyem, when you have to teach this nonsense, Tzarich Ledaber Beloshon Shiavinu Shem In Yonei Shtus Behevel. You have to say it in a way that they should understand that it's all nonsense. Eich shedavar hevel zeh asu v'davar hevel zeh ashar filu k'tzas ben das yimas b'zeh. Something that anyone who even has a little bit of das would be totally put off by such a thing. Like the Gemara says, kol leitznusa asura chutz miletznusa davar d'zara d'sharia, and then it's mutter. And he says the benefit that the students might have from it. And then then he writes, V'av shevadei ein lan lidrosh b'fnei umos olam b'davar dosam shemachzik mayom mitzad shalom ha-medina. I certainly, says Rav Moshe, would not get up in a public school classroom and start bad-mouthing Christianity or Islam or any of the other practiced religions in the world today. People that we have to share the earth with right now, but ancient avodah zarahs, no one will mind. No one will mind if you say, look, there's a reason why no one believes this stuff anymore, because it was all ridiculous. And he says it could be that it's going to be a toeles. So Rav Moshe does give some sort of indication that we could be, meaning that we're a little more makel on that because no one worships it anymore, and there's no risk of anyone worshiping it. But the idea is that you could teach it in such a way. Now, I was at a bar mitzvah last Shabbos. I was at two bar mitzvah last Shabbos. But one of the bar mitzvahs I was at, there was a guy that I hadn't seen since I think my early admissions year of YU. He was the smartest guy my age. I'm probably one of the smartest guys I ever met. I remember this fellow was a classmate of mine, Rabbi Hecht's Gemara Shir in 11th grade, and he never got less than 100 in any test. And he was also taking AP Calculus BC at that time in 11th grade. And he was, all of his classes were in the college because he couldn't, there was nothing the high school had to offer him that could challenge him. He was like a super duper genius, and he never got less than 100 on a test. And the kunz was, he was a bal tshuva. He first opened up a Gemara 3 months before 11th grade. He had never seen the inside of a Gemara before. And by the time he was in the top honors shir, and he never got, but he was a super brilliant guy. So I saw him for the first time in a long time at this bar mitzvah. So I was talking to him, And I was, he said, "No, what are you talking about? Are you giving a shiur?" So I mentioned this shaila that came up. So I said over this Rav Moshe. I said, "Rav Moshe says you have to make a leitzanus." So he said, "Does Rav Moshe say you have to make a leitzanus, or just that you're not allowed to say it in a complimentary way?" Meaning, Rav Moshe definitely says that it's best to make a leitzanus of it. That's not what the teacher's job is, though. The teacher's job probably is to teach it in a way that is totally non-judgmental, right? To say this is what they believed, not that you say that you believe it or that it's a reasonable belief, but probably not to say that it's an unreasonable belief either. Just to say that this is what people believed. Now, in yeshiva, it's probably different. In yeshiva, I think it's fair to say that they can make leitzanos. So, at the end of the day, is it a good idea for these students to be making images of Greek mythology? It's definitely not a good idea. All the shilas and poskim, about making such things are either when Jews were in the business of producing crosses and things like that for jewelry or whatever, and so it was a shas of chak for parnasa reasons, or b'di'eved, you already have such an image, do you have to get rid of it? But to actually make something that's avodah zarah, it might be usher, and even if it's not usher, it's mechur hadavar. It's certainly not appropriate. As far as the actual course, learning about these things, the teacher probably, I don't know if it belongs in yeshiva, but if it is going to be in yeshiva, the teacher probably has to be careful to do like Rav Moshe says, to say it in such a way where it's obvious that these things are out of style for a reason, that no one believes these things anymore for a reason. Now, what the fellow suggests, cut off the nose or something like that, that's a different issue. That's when you make a human image or something like that. So there's a separatist, or even if it's not avodah zarah, that you're not allowed to make a full human image. I remember Rabbi Tendler, Yishev Rufu Shalema, Rabbi Tendler's daughter once told me that as a little girl, she was joking. She said she never knew that people had noses, because every time she got a doll, her father cut off the nose of the doll, because he felt that it was an issue of having a human image. So he would do surgery on the dolls, but that's not that. I don't think that really relates to this issue at hand. So at the end of the day, 3 weeks into school, should the teacher say something? The principal's a firm person, so he should probably tell the principal. I don't know if you're aware that the kids are learning Greek mythology. It may be worth asking a shaila to whoever you ask your shailas to. I don't think, as a fourth year smicha student who just got his first job, he should go in and say, "Well, I'm about to receive a certificate that says Yaira Yaira, and therefore I paskin that this is us." No, you should probably tell the principal that that this is worthy of asking a shaila about. Okay, I thank you all for accommodating this unusual time on this Thursday afternoon. Everyone have a wonderful evening and a wonderful Shabbos.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.